There's been an enormous amount of change in business in the last 18 months, perhaps more than I've seen in my entire business lifetime up till now. And I'm keen to examine what some of these changes might be and what opportunities these might present. Why am I qualified to do this? Well, I am a businessman, a coach, an entrepreneur, an investor. I've set up more than 30 companies. I float a business on the stock market, led hostile takeovers. And I guess it's not always been glamorous, but I've worked at the coalface of Business Britain. But why should you take my word for it? I've prepared a list of 10 questions, and I'm going to ask the same 10 questions to 6 different people from completely disparate areas. Some people from the arts, billionaires, economists, comedians, and I'm asking them a whole range of questions from how they think business life will be in post-Brexit, post-COVID Britain, to the advice that they might give their children and what they think about climate change. And I look forward to exploring those conversations.
Gary, hi.
Paul, good morning.
I'm welcoming you to your show.
Isn't this the wrong way around?
It is, yeah. The tables have definitely been turned on you now.
Should I be interviewing you?
You should be, but I thought it would be a good idea for me to interview you, actually. You've got 3 decades or more worth of experience in various different businesses. You've started, scaled, and sold a number of businesses during your time. So that kind of gives you almost an unparalleled sort of insight and understanding as to the nuances, the challenges, the opportunities that are facing businesses in various different situations. You've experienced your own number of upturns and downturns in economies, and you've seen when things have gone sort of like flatlined. So the experience of the last 18 months probably isn't that unusual in terms of what you've gone through before. And I'm sure there are parallels to be had there. So it'd be really interesting to get your take. And I think particularly looking back at the last 18 months and trying to really get an understanding as to how that has positioned us in terms of what new opportunities or potential threats that might lie ahead for businesses over the next 18 months and beyond.
Well, you know, the last 18 months have been miserable, there's no doubt about it, but I'm more positive than ever about the future. I think there have only been 2 or 3 occasions in my business life when I've sort of seen this much kind of pent up demand and activity, and I'm really excited about the future. I'm really excited about a post-Brexit Britain. I spent some time living in Switzerland. I had a home in Switzerland for a while, and I saw how they interacted and were a great part of Europe without being in Europe. I think we can do the same, celebrate the differences between countries in Europe. And I think that there's, you know, I read an article called The Gift of the Jab, whereas I think post-COVID, almost like the sort of roaring 20s, or when Harold Macmillan said you've never had it so good after the Second World War, we're in for a real treat now in business. And if you can't succeed in business now, Paul, you might as well pack up and go home, because you shouldn't be here at all.
Is there not a fear that we've reverted to is it a splendid isolation that we have now? We've become an island state again. We're not part of the EU. You know, what's that, you know, how's that going to shape the way Britain, British businesses do business?
No, I don't think we've been an island state at all. I mean, I think what it's been interesting, actually, just look at how Europe screwed up trying to buy the vaccine for all the countries. They didn't. They just all went off their own separate ways and did different deals with different suppliers. So it's been very hard for Europe to be efficient. It's been difficult for them to not be wasteful in their putting their economies together. So do we need a trading relationship with America? There don't seem to be awful tariffs. I'm sure that we'll do trading relationships. So no, I'm terribly positive. And I think it's inconceivable that, you know, for example, the German economy won't want to sell their cars and dishwashers to us. Of course they will. Yeah. So I think sense will prevail when the emotion calms down.
The stock phrase that seems to be used time and time again, and we hear this pretty much every day, is everything has changed as a result of the pandemic. It has become somewhat of a cliche, but like most cliches, there is a resonance of truth within those as well. What do you see as being the greatest trends that will likely emerge from this current period?
You know, people, when dramatic things happen, people say, oh, the world's never going to be the same again. But it is. Mm. And it tends to revert back to close to normal. So, you know, 20 years ago, we're talking about the sort of 20-year birthday of 9/11. And I remember at the time how dreadful it was, and how I was seeing all these people jumping out of buildings and 5,000 people were killed. People said, the world will never be the same again. But it kind of is. You know, 60,000 people were killed on the first day of the First World War. That really was a tragedy. And things get back to normal. So I think when things like this happen, it's really speeding up a process that was already a trend that really was. And if you look at the high street, you know, there's a tragedy. So many shops have closed now. But actually, weren't they zombie shops anyway? Hasn't it just kind of hurried up their closing? Wasn't that the trend anyway? You know, it's been a tragedy that we've lost so many people. So many people have died. But many of them were old and infirm, and it's a real tragedy. So I think that the trends that were happening anyway will continue to happen. But actually, things do tend to get back to normal.
And we've obviously seen with things like the furlough scheme, which was then extended and then extended again, and there have been various other costs which the government is having to, you know, to pay for. And we're looking at a region of about £400 billion, which is, you know, no mean feat. It's a sizable amount of money, and that represents around 20% of GDP, and it's 10% higher than the amount the government spent during the last recession of 12, 13 years or so ago. How's that going to be paid? Who's going to pay for it? Where's the responsibility going to be? You know, which desk is it going to be put on?
Well, I think it's interesting. I don't think we should panic. £400 billion does seem like a lot of money, but actually with a bit of inflation in the system, the debt always tends to seem less. And I think we need to have a proper think about who's going to pay for it and who's going to pay for the NHS. Because even a school child would tell you very easily that this recent national insurance tax is complete horseshit, really. And it penalises young people and the job creators when actually, and it's because the people that vote and the members of the Tory party and the donators of the Tory party, you know, I'm speaking as an entrepreneur and as a capitalist now, and I love the free society. But in this case, you have to say the older, richer people who have households should be paying more. You know, there's a ceiling on national insurance. So the kind of really wealthy people are getting away with this. So I think that the way it should be paid for is probably by a taxation on housing. If you look at the kind of council tax that people pay, that's capped as well. You've got a £10 million house, you're paying the same as a person with a £3 million house.
Which doesn't seem to make any sense.
It doesn't seem to make any sense. And I think, Paul, that we should take a proper look at the taxation system and take a breath. I mean, when we're talking about, you haven't seen me talk about the NHS, that kind of monolith that's supported us through this. Because it seems to me there are two issues about the NHS. One is that it's underfunded. And the other issue is that it's this huge, inefficiently run monolith. And the answer isn't just raising money and throwing money at it. It's actually not, you know, successive governments have kicked the can down the road. We actually have to take a look at it and try and figure out a way of running it efficiently and fairly. And if that does mean outsourcing parts of it because it's more efficient to do that, then we should do that. So I don't think we should be overly freaked out about the amount of debt, but it does need to be paid for, but not by raising taxes for the entrepreneurs and the job creators, because they'll just go to a different country and do it elsewhere.
Mm. It kind of leads to the next question, really, which is it's kind of like a two-part question, really. One is the relationship between businesses and the government as a result of what's happened and things which are happening in the next few months, and also the element of trust as well. And it was quite interesting. The annual Edelman Trust Barometer came out at the beginning of this year, and it was saying that business confidence in government institutions is plummeting and has been for about 3 consecutive years, which isn't good at all, pardon me, at all. But it does lead to the question of, well, what does the government need to do to patch up the relationship it has with the business community, which I would argue they don't necessarily have a huge amount of confidence in the government, particularly when you've seen over the last few days there's talk of another lockdown potentially, even though the language surrounding it has been eased over the last 24 hours or so. But then, of course, you've got the element of, you know, well, do businesses actually trust the government to deliver on what they're going to say? Because there's been an awful lot of U-turns in the current administration, hasn't there?
There have. It's interesting, isn't it? I think people used to turn on the news and trust the BBC and trust what the government had said. And I think over the last 20 years or so, that trust is diminishing. I mean, we knew when Tony Blair said, oh, we're only 45 minutes away from getting nuked. We know we need to go into the Middle East and protect ourselves. We knew that was crap. I mean, people looking at the TV knew that was crap. And I think now people have stopped trusting the media, especially the BBC, and stopped trusting the government, because we're being spoon-fed such crap, really. And the decisions that have been made in lockdown have been disastrous. I mean, I'm thinking about the beginning when the government were decanting people with COVID into care homes to infect and ultimately end the lives of older people. Mm. So I think it's healthy for us to distrust the government, and we're seeing what other governments in different countries are spoon feeding their citizens in China and in Russia. I think it's a problem, and it may be that governments need to start making better decisions and telling the truth a bit more, and not trying to kind of mollycoddle the human race.
And I guess as well, on a leadership perspective, when you've got that kind of behaviour taking place and you don't seem to have a credible alternative leader who can come in and, you know, take up the mantle and actually do it how we think probably needs to be done, I suppose there are lessons there for business leaders as well to really think about, okay, well, you know, we can't trust the government to, you know, to do this or that, so we need to take ownership of it ourselves, I suppose.
Well, despite me saying that I'm really excited about the opportunity, business leaders hate uncertainty. Mm. And there does seem to be uncertainty at the moment. If we know what we're dealing with, we can make a plan to get there and chunk it down, and begin with the end in mind and work our way towards that goal. A bit like sort of setting a sat nav in your car and then following the plan to your destination. So it's uncertainty that business leaders don't like. Uncertainty of employment, uncertainty of taxes, and I think there is some uncertainty at the moment, and businesses are seen as soft targets. But if you punish the wealth creators and if you punish the job creators, then ultimately you won't get the tax receipts that you need to rebuild the economy.
You wrote a blog recently which I thought was fascinating, and there were 3 key things that really resonated with me in terms of what you were talking about. And it was in connection with Albany Beck, and you were talking about the focus on agility, rapid responsiveness, and pretty much reimagining the traditional recruitment model, the traditional business model, you know, for that particular sector. Do you think that's something that tomorrow's entrepreneurs, or even today's entrepreneurs, really new entrepreneurs and startups, need to really factor into the equation when starting a business? And, you know, how has the pandemic and this whole experience affected or influenced the way that entrepreneurs will be moving forward? Because I'm guessing there are going to be certain types of traits that they will need to deploy now compared to those that, you know, when I set up 15 years ago, when you set up, when you did. I'd just be interested to hear what you think on that.
I think 2 or 3 things on that. I think that the pace of decision-making has sped up, and people have, to survive, people have had to change their business model quickly, And some have embraced that really, really well. They've embraced an online presence. One of our clients, a group called Collinson, who run the kind of priority lounges at different airports, certainly had no customers. And they comment at a board meeting said, well, why don't we turn them into testing centres? And boom, suddenly there's a new business invented. So I think that the winners will be the agile companies, the companies that are able to walk between the legs of giants and turn quickly like a mirror dinghy can do. So I think those are qualities that they'll have. I think there's a great opportunity for the people that are prepared to come back to work, the hustlers that are prepared to get in front of people and see them eye to eye. I'm already seeing people back in the office, the kind of creativity across the water cooler. Yesterday I was in the office and somebody was on the phone to somebody else and they said, I know that person, put them on the phone, I know them, let me talk to them. And you wouldn't get that with home working. So I think there's a terrific opportunity for the kind of hustlers that are prepared to, you know, do what it takes now. And that's where my kind of excitement comes from. I think that there are opportunities everywhere. It's about the execution. Mm-hmm. You know, there are good ideas on every street corner. Yeah. It's about grabbing something and executing it brilliantly. I think lots of people that are thinking of setting up their own businesses are always waiting for this great idea, this great unique idea. But you know, they don't come along very often. Taking something that you feel passionate about and then executing it really well and working hard, I think that's the way forward. It could be anything.
Mm. You mentioned agility, which I think is quite an important one. And do you think, and there are very many different views on this, but do you think part of the reason why a number of businesses went to the wall during the pandemic was because they just weren't agile enough? They couldn't react and respond effectively, and they were so like channeled in their specific sector of focus without actually thinking, well, actually, we can use our own skills and experiences, but transplant them into other sectors or other products or services. Do you think there was an element of a lack of agility?
Absolutely, there was an element of lack of agility. And it's always been thus, hasn't it? You know, there was a time we'd all pop down to the high street and rent our DVDs from Blockbuster Video. And then, you know, life changed and it went digital. Now, Blockbuster could have adapted. They could have embraced that new digital technology. They could have been the new Netflix. But they chose not to. They, you know, sort of myopically carried down, you know, this path, and eventually went bust. But I suppose what Britain and especially America are good at is reinventing themselves. So high streets will reinvent themselves. Businesses will reinvent themselves. Mm. You know, there's sort of natural cleansing, really, that old business practices that don't work anymore aren't rewarded. And if COVID's done anything, it's kind of sped that up, I think.
Mm. In the you were recently interviewed for the Daily Telegraph, and I'm going to quote you. You said, "We are encouraging people. We're encouraging people to come back to the office 5 days a week." Can you talk a little bit more on that in terms of how you see the, you know, how relevant and important it is for people to be physically back working together in the same, you know, under the same roof, and you know what impact remote working on a prolonged period of time might have on individuals, organisations.
Without being over dramatic, I think we're starting to see the awfulness now that COVID has produced. Now people are coming back to the office, and I'm certain in my head that the medicine of lockdown will have caused more damage than the illness. So we're starting to see terrible mental health issues, addiction issues, divorce, domestic violence. We've got full-time psychologists on staff now, secretly talking to people or discreetly talking to people about their issues. We've had suicides, we've had attempted suicides, we've had people that have... And I think human beings are meant to be gregarious, mm-hmm. and to be the best version of themselves that they can be, need other people to bounce across. Mm-hmm. Businesses are creative instruments and thrive on new ideas and passion and creativity. And whilst I do see a place for some remote working, I think that the people that really want to get on are the ones that are prepared to come back and hustle and outpace their competitors. I mean, being good in business isn't ultimately about being good. It's about being better than the next person. And there's an opportunity now to get out there and come back and be the best version of yourself. I mean, I pay a personal trainer to beat me up at the gym. I give them money because I want to be the best version of myself I can be, and I wouldn't do it by myself. Yeah. I need a coach.
Mm. Do you think some of the decisions made by certain businesses, large and small, towards the end of last year and the turn of this year to announce that they were going to be fully remote or you know, at one point when, you know, lockdown was eased, that they would be partly remote, you know, the hybrid working model. Do you think some of those decisions were a little bit hasty? Because, you know, before Christmas, productivity levels seemed to be going up. Everyone was enjoying working from home. It was a novelty. But then the honeymoon period kind of wore thin, didn't it, towards Christmas and then the turn of the year. And then when lockdown was extended even further, it was like, oh, there was like a collective universal sigh that was exhaled. Do you think some of those businesses who made those early decisions might potentially be regretting them, or they might reverse them at some point?
I think that they will. I think some will be reversed, and I think a lot of people were going for the soundbite rather than thinking things through. As I said earlier, I think that there have been trends in business. You know, if you and I were talking 10 years ago, we might both have been wearing ties and a suit. We're not doing that now. You know, you wouldn't be an investor in the tie rack now, would you? You know, it's not a great place to be. So I think there have been trends. And for a while, even before COVID, there was a trend that people would work from home a little bit and that there'll be some productivity working from home. But I think there are a different set of rules, and there are different types of people that are successful when they're working from home, because there needs to be a different, you know, you need to be more disciplined. So from the office, you know, you need to work to engage people more while they're working from home. You know, perhaps you need to check with somebody when you're signing in or signing off. You know, if you have the luxury to have a desk and a laptop at home, you know, young people in a shared accommodation flat in London might not be able to do that. They don't have the luxury to do that. And there's a different amount of discipline to be successful. So it'll suit some people. But it's not that the working from home people need to change. It's the management of them need to change as well. To be more sophisticated in the way that we remote manage people.
On a slightly different subject matter, I suppose, we had, you know, the dot-com boom where the internet came along and completely disrupted the world of commerce. We're now seeing the sharp rise in cryptocurrency. You've got the likes of El Salvador a few months ago who announced that they were making Bitcoin legal tender, and there are other nations that are stating that they're going to be doing something very, very similar. Is it just hype, or do you see this as the future of financial transactions?
I wish it would be the future of transactions, because I love the thought of a free economy. But the realist in me thinks that various countries and governments won't want to see that freedom. They'll still want to retain control of their economy. And I looked up last week, and there are now over 20 countries that have either banned or are thinking of banning or have restricted cryptocurrencies in some ways. So I may be wrong, I often am, but I would be a seller of cryptocurrencies. I would be a shorter of that market if you're playing it for financial gain. And sadly, I think it will be something that's running at the periphery of, I don't think it's going to replace the sort of what we call legal tender.
Mm. The Guardian earlier this week reported, they published the results of a survey that was undertaken, a global survey by Bath University, and they found that 60% of 16 to 25-year-olds are worried or extremely worried about climate change and the impact it's going to have on all of us. 40%, interestingly, said that they don't feel the government is doing enough to positively affect climate change. Are we all doomed? Is climate change something that is irreparable, or can we still do something about it?
Well, I think it is irreparable. I think we can do something about it. But just to kind of spin this on its head a little bit, I mean, I was a child of the 60s. I was born in the 60s. There were 3 billion people on the planet in the 60s. Now there are 8 billion people on the planet. You know, that's the reason, or one of the main reasons, that we've got problems with if humans are one of the reasons that the climate is changing, that reason is because there are 8 billion of us, not 3 billion of us. And I think just buying an electric car, you know, isn't the answer. The world is getting warmer, and that will mean that some countries are more difficult to live in and have challenges that we'll have to deal with. I don't think we can turn the clock back. I think we're just going to have to learn to find solutions.
Yeah.
And most of the damage is caused by, you know, either agriculture or burning fossil fuels. So unless big countries, you know, let's talk about China. Unless China take responsibility for burning fossil fuels, you know, people are going to be looking at them and wondering why they aren't setting better examples.
Do you think businesses are doing enough to tackle climate change? I mean, there's a lot of talk. There was the Competition and Markets Authority announced in April that around 60% of claims made by businesses about their so-called green credentials are bollocks. What do you think of that? Do you think they are? Do you think there's a lot of wanting to pin their colours to the mast but not actually, you know, follow up what they preach that they do?
When businesses have a cost to change things, they'll tend to resist it. So there has to be pressure. You know, we had terrible health and safety issues, you know, in the mining industry 100 years ago. Terrible health and safety, people were killed in mines all the time. So businesses need to be coerced and forced to make changes, or embarrassed to make changes, until it becomes cultural. Yeah. And then there's a seesaw. And if businesses then think that they're rewarded for making those changes, then that's when it'll become cultural and endemic.
Final question. If you were addressing a school of future entrepreneurs, the next generation, children who are looking to set up and start up on their own and achieve something, you know, even remotely close to what you've achieved during your career, and you had to impart just a single piece of advice, what would that advice be?
It would really be about, and that's a good question, because I did recently address 400 girls at a school in Enfield, a girls' school in Enfield, a state school in Enfield, and if they are the future, then I think we're in safe hands. I was really impressed with the questions they asked, and so my advice to young people going into business would really be about: be curious, ask lots of questions, ask why not, be cynical, don't believe everything you're told. And be confident in yourself, you know, work for yourself. You know, I'd encourage entrepreneurs to set up businesses young. You don't need to wait until you've got 50 grand's worth of student debt. You know, if you want to drop out and start up when you've got nothing to lose, you can pick yourself up, dust yourself down, and get a job with somebody else if it doesn't all go right. So be optimistic, be positive, but ask lots of questions. That would be my advice.
That's a great way to finish. Gary, thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you for putting me on the spot, Paul.
And I hope it's been an enjoyable experience being in the other seat for once.
It's more difficult being in the other seat. Thank you.